this session was a waste of taxpayer dollars for everybody in the state of Missouri.
That may not be the kind of thing you typically expect your state legislator to say in a public forum. But as a quiet town hall meeting in Kansas City came to a close this weekend, Missouri State Rep. Brandon Ellington couldn't help but express some of his own frustrations in a debriefing with one of our reporters. See, Brandon represents Kansas City in the Missouri legislature, and he heads up the Legislative Black Caucus. He's been outspoken about the lessons he thinks the state should be learning from Ferguson. But of the 60 Ferguson-related bills that have been proposed in the legislative session, and that 60, as in 6-0, only 2 have made noticeable progress.
We've passed no bills that actually benefit anybody in the state of Missouri this year. Only thing we've done is figure out new ways to put extra burdens on people in the state. It's not just about Michael Brown getting shot, it's about the historical abuses that have been happening to people of color, and now people are fed up because they feel like nobody's listening.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and Central Standard is listening. It's my pleasure to welcome Brandon Ellington to Central Standard this morning. Hi, Brandon.
How you doing today?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good.
60 bills is a lot. What kinds of things are we talking about exactly? What's in these bills?
We're talking about everything from video and audio equipment to be required to law enforcement officers, to mental evaluations every 3 years, civilian review boards, some bills dealing with deadly force and the discretion of police officers to use deadly force. Some bills deal with racial profiling and collecting data. It's a bill that's been sitting that's extremely simple that just requires a checkoff. When people are pulled over before their car gets searched. A lot of these bills are pretty simple, but they will have a great impact.
Can you explain what you mean by a checkoff? What would be checked off?
Basically, if you was pulled over and the officer wants to search your car, then either you sign a written consent form saying that you give consent to search your car, or the officer would check off on there that you did not give consent to search your car. It would not stop the officer from being able to search your car. It just gives the checks and balance for people when they go in front of a judge if their car got searched and they did not give permission if it was an illegal search of their car. Obviously, if it's probable cause, then that overrides it, and the officer still can search your car regardless.
So where do these things stand right now?
All of them are sitting in committee, which pretty much means that all of the bills are dead by virtue of the time that we have left on the calendar. We have a little under 5 weeks left before the end of session. So the likelihood that someone's going to come out of the House and go over to the Senate and then go over to the governor's desk is extremely slim.
Why do you think these laws are getting held up? There's so much traction around these issues right now, not just in Missouri, but nationally.
Well, at the beginning of the session, the speaker stated that we would not have a Ferguson agenda here and that he would not do anything that looks like it's anti-law enforcement, which is the problem, the ideology. Like, if we talk about the video and audio equipment, that's not anti-police. That's actually pro-prosecution, because if a police officer approaches somebody that's doing something illegal, then they have video and audio of their interaction. If a police officer has a charge filed against them and they did nothing wrong, then that validates the police officer. And it's the same protections for citizens. If something illegal is happening to them, then they will have video and audio equipment for it. Same with the written consent.
One of can I just jump in here? One of the arguments I've heard against this kind of thing has to do with infrared technology, that people looking at the photographic documentation of some of this stuff, depending on how advanced the camera technology is, can sometimes see some things that the officers can't. Is that something that has been addressed in discussions around this bill?
Well, when you talk about the different technology, I'm pretty confident that we're not going to invest in infrared body cameras for police officers or X-ray cameras for police officers. When you talk about privacy issues and privacy concerns, if we craft a piece of legislation at the state that requires municipalities to have video and audio equipment, we can also work with those municipalities to ensure that privacy is protected. As various states that have passed or various states that have implemented video and audio equipment, and we're not seeing videos being posted on YouTube, it would be some tenement to a dashboard camera and the way dashboard cameras are utilized. You don't see dashboard cameras just getting put out unless the police department themselves put that out. But it's all type of ways that we can allow the local police departments to create policies in which they're not victimizing people or people's privacy is being protected.
Do national headlines affect Missouri lawmakers? Like, do Eric Garner and Walter Scott enter into the conversations our local representatives are having with one another?
It should, but it hasn't when you talk about the Republican leadership. When the Department of Justice investigation came out, obviously a lot of people was upset. I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats. Regular House members was upset. A lot of Republicans were disgusted when they talked to me about some of the findings that they found in the DOJ investigation. But the Republican leadership, it fell on deaf ears. The Republican leadership didn't have any desire and still doesn't have any desire to move any type of legislation that would deal with criminal justice reform.
But you're saying that the response to those findings in the Department of Justice investigation, that response was kind of bipartisan?
And from the general members, when they read the discovery and they seen the abuses that have been happening that's been documented in St. Louis, yes, they were disgusted. But it fell on deaf ears when it came to the leadership, because the leadership still chose not to move any bills. The leadership still chose to say that these incidents were isolated and that is not a great concern to the citizens of Missouri. When it is, it's not a cultural thing. It has nothing to do with black folks, white folks, Latinos, et cetera. This is an abuse of power that is well documented in the state of Missouri. When we look at hit ratios for so-called minorities, arrest ratios for so-called minorities, incarceration rates for so-called minorities, the data is clear. But leadership in the House of Representatives is not paying attention to the data or the concerns of its lesser citizens. And I say lesser citizens, so when we talk about so-called minorities, the numbers isn't the same as the majority.
Why did you call this weekend's town hall meeting? I mean, you've made a case that all of these bills are essentially dead in committee, given the timeline. So what was the purpose of this weekend's town hall meeting in your mind?
Well, every year, I've been doing a bi-state Black Caucus town hall meeting. Like this weekend, we have it in St. Louis. We do it for a couple reasons. One, to be greater connected with our constituent base, because some of us represent Kansas City, some of us represent St. Louis, and have direct conversations with people that we represent to let them know what we're working on as a caucus, the type of initiatives that we're pushing forward, and just to give them a basic update of what's going on.
In your mind, are new laws going to make the difference when two human beings come into conflict with one another and start operating on adrenaline and fear, like in these kind of altercations between police and people they're interacting with?
No, I do. In California, when they introduced video and audio equipment, we've seen an 88% reduction in police brutality and also complaints against police officers. When we talk about the bills that have to do with further training with police officers, such as cultural sensitivity training, et cetera, we know that this works because it gives people greater, what's the word I want to use? It gives people greater resources to be able to deal with the public. The more I understand about any subject, the better I'm going to operate. It's the same when we talk about shooting training. Police officers go to shooting range to improve their accuracy. So we should have training that actually improves their sensibility and improves their ability to interact with the public. So, yes, I do believe that changing certain laws will have a great benefit. The same with the written consent. In the state of Missouri, we have a lot of different incidents when it comes to racial profiling. Well, this would just be clear, because if somebody is pulled over and they haven't given consent, then that's seen. Now, if they have something illegal, then that's something that the courts is going to deal with. If they don't, then that adds more questions.
I want to know from our listeners what you think about this. Is reform needed in response to Ferguson? And if so, what does reform look like to you? 816-235-2888 is the number to call to join this discussion. That's 816-235-2888. And Brandon, tell me about the Black Caucus. The organization's been around since 1989, right?
A little bit longer than that. We're actually the oldest recognized official caucus in the nation, I believe.
What's the idea behind it?
Well, simple to fight for issues, not just black issues, but issues that affect so-called minority communities. And it's a necessity when we talk about the overtness of society and the isolation of smaller communities. So we don't just fight for black issues. We actually fight for issues that affect all so-called minorities, which would be black folks, women, gays, Latinos, Asians, and we have a small Asian population in the state of Missouri. That's the reasoning behind the Black Caucus, because it has to be political mechanisms that are ensuring that they're fighting for people that have that doesn't have a voice, that doesn't have a seat at the table. And you asked another question. What was the other question that you asked when you was giving the number up?
What does reform look like to you? I mean, I asked that to our listeners, but yeah, I'd love to hear your answer to that.
Reform looks like, to me, it looks like laws that are more palatable and laws that are actually crafted to ensure that citizens are being protected. What we have right now is loopholes in the law. We have loopholes in the court system where courts are allowed to gouge citizens to make up ungodly amounts of revenue. We have some municipalities in the state of Missouri that generate 70-80% of the operating costs out of traffic fines without gouging citizens, different ordinance violations. So court reform is desperately needed. Interaction between police officers and low-income communities is something that has to be improved. And it's not an isolated incident. I don't care if you go to St. Louis, Kansas City, or any other municipality around here that has a small population. You will see a difference between interactions with law enforcement in low-income areas. Some of that has to do with some of the requirements where police officers can stay because they don't, in low-income areas, they don't live in that area, so they really don't know the people around that area. That's a lot of things that I believe we have to start working on for reform.
Brandon, does the Black Legislative Caucus have a special role to play in these particular Ferguson-related bills?
Well, I don't like to use the word Ferguson-related bills.
Interesting.
This is part of the conversation that we're missing. Michael Brown getting shot in the street happened in Ferguson. Police brutality has been happening since the 60s. Well, really longer than that. But we can say since the second Reconstruction, we have clear data of different police brutalities. So when we talk about illegal stops, that happens in Kansas City, and it didn't just start in August. When we're talking about illegal searches, it happens in Kansas City, didn't just happen in August. When we talk about the uneasiness between so-called minority communities and law enforcement, that didn't just happen in August. What we've seen in St. Louis in August was the fallout of years of frustration. When you read the Department of Justice investigation, it doesn't start with Michael Brown. It starts with historical abuses that the police department in Ferguson has been doing. So when we talk about criminal justice reforms, everybody wants to tag it as, well, this is a reaction to Ferguson. No, it's not. When I filed the video and audio equipment bill, I filed that last session. Michael Brown wasn't even a thought to me. He hadn't even been killed when I first filed that bill. But had we had this piece of legislation enacted, it would be no question what happened. We wouldn't have had the riots, and we wouldn't have had everything that happened in St. Louis as a fallout from misinformation that's been coming out. So that's why I never use the word Ferguson-related legislation or Ferguson-related issues, because Ferguson was just a tipping point of things that have been simmering for years.
Brandon, is this on some level personal for you?
Well, which one? Yes, not definitely. When you talk about oppressed communities, I grew up in an oppressed community. So anything that is done to oppress people, I do take it personally.
Where did you grow up? Tell me about it.
I grew up in Kansas City, on the east side of Kansas City. So anything that is done to oppress people, I take it personally. When we cut education funding for public schools, I take that personally. When we cut benefits for seniors, I take that personally. When we cut employment benefits or unemployment benefits for people that work and they lost their jobs, yes, I take that personally. When we give corporations large tax cuts and then we cut social services for poor folks, I take that personally. So yes, it's personal to me because I understand oppression, I understand abuse, and I understand that we have to get to a system in which we're being honest about what we see, we're being honest about institutions, and we're adjusting those institutions to eradicate any type of abuse mechanisms that have grown or became ingrained in those institutions.
Brandon, to the casual observer, you've risen to prominence in the Missouri legislature very quickly. I know that 4 years does not feel like overnight when you're in it, but tell me more about your background. Have you always wanted to go into politics?
I started getting politically involved when I was 19. Started a group called Voices of the People, which we do the political, legal, economic, and academic. We actually hold free political courses, free legal courses, educational courses. We started Community University. But politics came about from the lack of resources that I've seen in my community. And then some of the interactions between police officers when I was younger.
Can you flesh that out a little bit? Because you said you grew up on the east side in Kansas City. Where on the east side, and under maybe a little more specifically, under what circumstances?
I grew up off of 59th and Prospect and 35th in Jackson, so the east side of Kansas City. Circumstances, I was raised by a single mother. Went to various schools, went to pretty decent schools, magnet schools, went to Pinkerton, King, Bishop Hogan and Purcell. So I got a very interesting background when it comes. Those are high schools, and I also went to Penn Valley and UMKC. So I have a very interesting interpretation of schools, because not only did I go to public schools, I went to parochial schools. I went to magnet themed schools, and then I went to a regular public high school. So I got to see the difference in the type of attainment and educational resources that different schools get. Which definitely plays a heavy role when it comes to the education aspect.
Brandon, I want to jump in and ask you, I'm hearing something in the background there. Can you tell us what's going on in the background?
Yes, I'm actually I'm behind the floor. We're in session right now, so you're hearing the microphone from the floor.
Wow. Okay, so politics is in action in the background as we're speaking with Brandon. So back to this question about your upbringing, you talked about that you've seen oppression firsthand. Describe what you're talking about exactly.
Okay, if you stay in Kansas City and you drive down Truce, if you go from Truman Road out to 87 and you start traveling east, going east of Truce, you will see a great differences, not in housing structure, but in resources that is actually on the ground. You will start to see stores disappear. You will start to see abandoned houses multiply. You will start to see lots that are unmained and unkept. You start to see school buildings that are left open for the public to walk in. I mean, when I say open, the school is no longer open. The school is closed, but the building itself is open, whether the door is broke, a board is pulled off, et cetera. When you go into stores, you will see a different makeup in stores. And what I mean by makeup, you'll see stores that are chain stores that are not kept up like certain chain stores are. You start seeing dirty floors, dirty walls, but these are regular stores that if you go west, like a Walgreens, it's clean, or a Family Dollar.
And you
clean.
Think politics is the solution? Do you think politics is a solution to that?
Yeah, politics is the engagement factor in America. So everything breaks down from the political arena. The way we allocate our money is all political. Taxes is all political. The way resources are allocated through a city is all political. You don't see politicians paying attention to low-income areas because low-income areas have low voter turnout. So since they have low voter turnout, they have no value to political powers. And it's the same that we see at the state. At the state, we have the ability to affect everybody in the state of Missouri, positively or negatively. And what we choose to do is catered to corporations, because corporations right now is pretty much running our political process in the state of Missouri. And some of that has to do with term limits, because we're getting rid of institutional knowledge, and the people that have been here the longest and they understand most of the process is lobbyists, which is scary. Our education, everybody knows education is the way out of poverty, yet we consciously underfund public school education. That's a conscious decision. So, yes, politics controls everything through the political arena. I use our criminal justice system.
You have a very strong belief in the political system and its power, what it's capable of. Do you remember, is there a moment when you caught the political bug? Because I think you have clearly got the bug.
Well, I would say when I was at UMKC, I was studying political science. One of my professors challenged me to run and I caught it because I understood politics. Like, I understood what we can do. The only negative that I see in the political arena is that the average person doesn't pay attention. And since the average person doesn't pay attention, then the average person gets politicians that don't pay attention to them. The average person gets a political process that on face value is broken. And it's only broken because we're not being engaged. Because the minute we become engaged in the process, we can dictate how our institutions look. We can dictate how society looks, how our social contract looks. But since we don't get involved, we say politicians are going to do whatever they're going to do. And yes, you're right. Because you're not involved, you didn't select a representative, somebody else put that person in office, and he's going to do the bidding of whatever agency put them in office.
Well,
when
tell
the
me,
agency should be the people.
So you ran for office based on a challenge from a professor, is that right?
The first time when I ran for city council.
Well, running for office without having really necessarily built up momentum for that over a long period of time, consciously anyway, did anything surprise you about that process of running for office and getting elected?
Yeah, when I first ran, because I have tattoos, I got neck tattoos. I'm definitely from the inner city. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. So when I first ran, the perception was, and I had dreads when I first ran, well, you can't win. You're not going to get people to vote for you, et cetera. But the racial lines disappears when you talk sense. Racial lines disappear when you talk facts. And that surprised me because when I first ran, I actually won North Kansas City like 3-1. And everybody said, well, you can't win North Kansas City. They're not going to vote for you. But the language and what I was talking about on the city level, they understood and they supported that. And it's the same in partisan politics. When I first got elected to the state, I thought it was going to be a constant battle between Democrats and Republicans. Was actually more common ground. The problem is the partisan politics, where we have people that just vote party lines because this is what the party tells them to do. They're not voting their heart.
Well, you know, that I am really curious about that dynamic. There are 163 representatives serving Missouri in the state house altogether. 117 of those are Republicans. You're a Democrat. What's that like in the day to day?
It's scary because we don't have the ability to control anything. So it takes 82 votes to get something out of the House. And committees are selected by the majority population. It actually resembles a majority. So if you have a committee with 13 people on there, three of them is going to be Democrats, which means you don't have the ability in your own party to stop bad pieces of legislation coming out of the committee. The same when you talk about bad pieces of legislation coming off the floor. And the speaker and the floor leader controls the whole process. And so if the speaker wants your bill to go to committee, he sends it. If he doesn't, your bill's dead. If he does send it to committee, then it's up to the chair to give you a hearing. You're not guaranteed a hearing. And if you do get a hearing, you're not guaranteed that the bill is voted out. So it's all about relationships. You have to have good relationships to be able to move legislation. But then the partisan politics comes into play, and that's what's happening with the bills that are related to criminal justice reform.
You know, getting back to Ferguson, which is where we started, you were talking about progress on these bills that are sitting there in committee right now. And when I think about progress, I'm wondering, at what pace is progress realistic? I mean, does this kind of thing just take longer? Is 2 out of 60 bills arguably a good start?
No, it's a terrible start. Progress in the political process can move as quick as the will of the body. To give you an example, Right to Work came out in the first 2 weeks of session. Now, it's Republicans that don't support Right to Work, but it came out. We cut, in the House, it hasn't been signed by the governor, but we cut unemployment benefits from 20 weeks down to 13 weeks. We did that in the first 3 weeks. That benefits nobody. So when we want things to move quickly, they move quickly. When we want things to be stalled out, then we see things getting stalled out. And that goes to the will of the people. While we're here, some days we work from 10 a.m. to like 9 or 10 at night on the floor. The longest I've ever been here was at 1:30 at night. So if we cannot, in 13 or 14 hours, debate, put amendments on bills, and change the structure of those bills, we shouldn't be here. So we can do it. It's just the will isn't here to do it.
Diane tweeted us saying that I've asked you if Ferguson-related bills are personal, and she wants to know, she says the question should be, why isn't this personal to everyone? So I want to ask you, you know, do you think others on the floor take it personally?
No, because we all learn, I don't care how smart you are, we all learn from observation and participation. So whatever you participate in and whatever you observe, this is where your understanding comes from. So a lot of the body doesn't understand the concerns. And a perfect example would be a small rural community and a inner city community. In a small rural community, you know the sheriff. You probably went to school with the sheriff. So if the sheriff sees you out there, and let's say you are doing something stupid but not felony orientated, then that sheriff is going to give you a break because he knows you. In the inner city area, you have law enforcement officers that doesn't stay in the inner city. So their interaction is only to come in there to police the area. They have no commonalities with the people that they're policing. And it's the same with victimization. Unless you've been victimized, you don't understand it. Unless you know somebody personally that has been victimized, it's not a reality. Perfect example, I teach domestic violence courses. We do it once a month. And when we're doing the domestic violence courses, we actually have women and men in there that stand up and be like, well, I guess I've been abusing. Not even know I've been abusing, because they think domestic violence is just hitting a woman or hitting a man. They don't understand it. It's how you talk to your kids. It's how you interact with your spouse. It's all type of different aspects to domestic violence. And they only start understanding that once they observe it in the setting in which we expose it. And it will be the same when we talk about the being desensitive to communities that have been suffering or communities that have been victimized. And it's not saying that all law enforcement officers are bad. It's not saying that at all. It's saying that the perception of the community in which they're coming in is that it's dangerous. So their senses are already up high, as opposed to when they come in there, they feel comfortable.
Brandon, you represent a minority in the Missouri legislature in many different senses of the word, not just party affiliation, but also age and race. And you were just describing, you know, the difference between urban and rural, the urban to rural proportions. How do you deal with that? Is that something that brings special kinds of responsibilities, or do you deal with it in the way everyone deals with representing whatever community they represent?
No, I actually overextend myself. Like, it's some, and you hear me say Republicans a lot because 118, 119 of them, something like that. So last year, drove four or five hours out of Kansas City to go out to, I can't think of the name of the place.
You drove a long way, though.
Yeah, and if I could think of it, they got, like, all the little museums and stuff like that out there. But anyway, I drove out there because one of the representatives, he's a Republican, he asked me to come out there. So when I came out there, he took me around his area. We went to a school function, had over 2,000-something kids there. They was doing poetry, math, reading plays, et cetera. Drove around the city with him, actually stayed out there with him for the weekend. And I did that because I wanted to understand where he was from. I wanted to be able to talk to him in a different environment. And it gave me a different understanding. Last week, I went out to a rural area so I can understand what they was talking about when they was talking about easements and utility companies just taking their land, using eminent domain to build stuff. And when I was out there, I got a different understanding because the gentleman whose house I went to, he had 300-something acres. Well, in the city, you'd be lucky if you have 100 acres, if that, or 10 acres, or however the lot it is.
Brandon.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, thank you. It's time for me to say goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
No, thank you.